out of the question now. Hopefully they didn't get lost.
Yeah.
Looks like it's still going to rain. I studied her, judging whether now was a good time and figuring the basics wouldn't hurt. What's your name? She didn't move, and her voice might as well have been coming from the trees or the cliffs above.
Audrey Plainfeather. She was half crow.
Audrey. And the child's name, the boy?
Adrian.
I nodded to myself and looked up the slope. There was a more manageable route to the west, an area where the ridge fell back. It would be easier to make the grade, especially at an angle. I'm going up.
I'll go with you.
I placed a hand on her shoulder. Somebody's going to have to stay here and wait for the crime scene folks. She shrugged off my hand and stood, partially pulling the radio from her belt.
I've got this, and I figure they'll be able to get close on their own. I can spot them on the main road easier from up on the ridge anyway.
Well, then, can you do me a favor?
Depends.
I sighed. It's going to take me a lot longer to get up this cliff than you, so I want a head start. I smiled, but she didn't smile back. On the next ridge over there and toward the saddle, I pointed at the area across the creek. There's another camera sitting in the grass where Henry and I dropped it when we saw Audrey fall. Would you mind going to get it and bringing it with you, or putting it in your vehicle? She took a second to respond.
All right.
I looked up at the gathering gloom and then called after her. You sure you want to go up there?
Yes.
She turned back and opened an ear stem of her sunglasses with her teeth, then carefully navigated them onto her face.
Besides, you're still under arrest. Now get moving. I don't want to have to wait for you.
She started up the hill, her broad back and strong legs aiding her climb effortlessly. Yes, ma'am. The grade was indeed easier up to the right, and there was a gully to the left with trees in it to lean against. The older you get, the more important things like that become. The ground was soft with the earth that sloughed from the ridge above, and after a while I gathered a rhythm that seemed familiar and similar to the one that had carried me up Cloud Peak only 2 months ago. The thought of that adventure brought a chill, even though the ambient temperature lingered around 90. I removed my hat and took a breather about three-quarters of the way up. From this height I could see Lonnie's crows harassing an eagle that was lazily circling in patterns along the valley. The crows probably had nests nearby and were protecting their young, or just getting their exercise before the thunderheads massed and we had a real frog strangler. I inhaled and started up again, still using the smaller trees as walking sticks, finally getting to the depression at the ridge. When I did, I looked to the right and could see Lolo Long making mincemeat of the more difficult direct route. I would have yelled to her, but I didn't have the breath. There was a two-track dirt road that stretched in both directions just a little bit back from the precipice, so I turned right and worked my way along the ridge. After a few minutes, I noticed that the grass was flat and there were tread marks in the dirt. I stopped and kneeled down to look. Someone had driven up here and back out, and not long ago. My eyes followed the tracks where the vehicle had parked, made a two-point turn, and then gone out the way it had come. The depressions were deeper where the vehicle had sat for a period of time. There were even two small oil leaks with matching soot marks from where what I was assuming was a truck had been parked. After a couple of hundred yards, the grade leveled, and the rounded surface of the rock fell away to the cliffs. A dangerous place. Lolo Long, looking out into the distance with her hands on her hips, stood about 10 feet from the edge.
Hey, Chief.
What?
Somebody drove a four-wheel drive up here not too long ago. There are two patches of differential fluid and the tires are wide and the dual exhausts are set close. I'd say a Jeep, something like that.
She turned to look at me. How do you know where the exhaust was?
I pointed. The two soot marks from where it was restarted. I stood. They're going to need a ring job before too long. Something further back on the trail caught my eye, and I walked over to where it was lodged among the taller stalks of Johnson grass. It was a plastic bag, the kind you find at any grocery or convenience store.
Did she have a vehicle like that?
Her lips tightened into a line, and the muscles in her jaw worked.
No. The guy she was shacking up with, Adrian's father, does.
I pulled the blue plastic sack from the weeds. It was full of crushed beer cans, a couple of empty chip bags, and some candy wrappers. There was a receipt in the bottom of the bag, soggy from the remnants draining from the containers. I pulled the receipt out and held it up. Across the top were the words White Buffalo Sinclair. And listed below were the items that were in the used bag, with the exception of the beer and a pack of cigarettes, as well as $32 worth of regular gasoline. The date was today, at 11:22 a.m. Chief Long approached, and I handed the sack to her, along with the receipt. She read it, withdrew a couple of evidence bags, and carefully placed the slip of paper inside one, the blue plastic into the other. I took out the camera and began taking pictures again, sucked in a breath, and trudged along to the precipice. The surface was a loose scrabble of sedimentary shale that looked like shattered terracotta in a wild cathedral floor. The footing was unstable, and a few lizards scrambled like ball bearings over the hard surface. I moved toward the edge and kneeled down to look at the disturbed rock shelves at the point where the woman had fallen. The wind picked up a little, nudging me from behind as I allowed my eyes to drift toward the clouds again, some of them trailing low enough to almost reach out and touch. The crows and the eagle continued to flirt with them, pinwheeling and passing away from each other, circling, and using the rising thermals and gusts of wind for lift. There was a rapid movement that pulled me from my trance. A little pygmy rattler swiveled from a small outcropping to my left, probably after the lizards. I picked up a small rock and tossed it toward him to let him know he should keep going away from us, and he obliged by disappearing. I could see where Audrey had gone over the edge, and where she desperately attempted to hold back the inevitable with one hand. Must have been the one that was missing fingernails. There was another area of disturbance in the rocks right in front of me, possibly where she had tripped, or possibly where there could have been some sort of struggle. I shot a look back at Chief Long and pointed to the edge. "Do you see that?" She stood her 10 feet back and made no effort to move.
"What?"
"The marks in the rocks." She glanced over my shoulder.
"Yeah?"
"You can see it better from over here." She adjusted the strap of the crime scene bag on her shoulder.
"I can see fine."
I took another series of shots, the rocks crumbling and shifting under my boots. Catching my balance, I took the few steps back to where she stood like a pole. "You okay?"
"Yes."
It was a quick answer and was meant to cut off any more conversation on the subject, the kind of response I'd learned to ignore. "What's up?" She gave me the full kaleidoscope eyes, and I felt like I'd been kicked.
"I don't like heights."
I gazed back at the cliff and gestured toward it. "Well, it's only natural, considering..."
"That's not it."
I tipped my hat back and studied her. She really was beautiful, and I could see the complexity of conflicting thoughts as they played across her face. I raised a hand toward her. "What then?" She swallowed and retreated from the edge and my touch.
I had this urge to jump.
Shrugging her shoulder, I stepped past her toward the main part of the grass-covered trail. "That's normal, too. It can be categorized as a risk impulse. It's the subjective aspect of our natures that makes rodeo riders strap themselves to Brahma bulls or skydivers jump out of perfectly good airplanes. Freud called that kind of risk-taking behavior the death drive and associated it with gambling, sex, and, well, a lot of other things." She stayed put and kept looking for signs in the passing clouds.
"He connected everything with sex, didn't he?"
"Pretty much." She turned and looked at me as her radio crackled. She lifted it out of her belt and looked at the road below.
Roger that, Unit 1. We're at the top, but we'll be right down.
I walked back toward the cliff and could see a white Yukon, a black Expedition, and a highway patrol cruiser. Looks like they didn't get lost after all.
Yeah.
She didn't move after reholstering the two-way. You want to go down and meet them? She nodded and reset her jaw.
Are we through up here?
With the limited resources we have, yes. She still didn't move, and I could tell there was a lot more she wanted to say.
Look.
I waited, but she didn't say anything else. Then she cleared her throat and coughed up a few words.
I'm new to this stuff, but I don't feel like being railroaded by the... I mean, maybe I'm a lousy cop, but I'd like to find out on my own.
She stopped and turned to look at me.
Before we go down there, I'd like to make sure we're on the same page.
Meaning?
I know more about this case than you or they do. I know the people involved. And I'm not buying it.
Her eyes came down to the edge of the cliff and studied the surface, fractured and dangerous.
It's not that high.
Most suicides are from approximately 500 feet, high enough to kill but low enough to not last too long. The wind gusted, and I was reminded that this was no longer a good place. You're not buying what?
Lolo Long stood there like a sentinel. There's no way a woman walks out to the edge of a cliff like this with her child in her arms.
Bingo. I smiled and studied her in a professorial manner. Maybe you're not such a lousy cop after all.
Her eyes flared and she looked directly at me, and I thought for a moment that she might try and throw me off the cliff. She took a step and turned to the right toward the direct path down, then called over her shoulder, "There's another reason."
I followed along behind her. Reason for what? I barely heard the words as they drifted back with the breeze that continued to stiffen.
For jumping. Just to have it all over with.
The feds were already setting up camp on the same ridge where we'd parked, and a blonde-haired young man who looked like one of the agents and a highway patrolman were the first to reach us. The FBI agent, in a short-sleeved shirt, held out a hand to me.
"Beau Benth, it's a pleasure to meet you, Sheriff. I've heard and read a lot about you."
I shook his hand and introduced Lolo. "This is Chief Long." I went ahead and threw in the next just so there wouldn't be any confusion. "She'll be the primary investigator." Agent Benth smiled as Long studied her ropers. He glanced up at the cliff.
"We understood it was pretty cut and dry."
"No, actually it's not. There's a survivor, and a friend of mine, and I actually witnessed the fall. Chief Long and I have already done the preliminary crime scene work here and above."
He looked at the gathering thunderclouds building over the cliffs.
"Good, 'cause I've got a feeling we're about to get pissed on."
They started past toward the deceased.
"As to whose responsibility this is, you can take that up with the new agent in charge."
"Where's he?"
Benth threw a thumb over his shoulder and gave me a strange smirk.
"Trying to get reception on his mobile back in the vehicle. You're going to love him."
As we walked down the hill, Officer Long hooked her thumbs into the pockets of her jeans.
"Great."
"What?"
"A new AIC, just what I need."
I nodded. "Did you know the last one?"
"Only over the phone. I was lucky."
She glanced back at Painted Warrior.
"I guess my luck ran out."
We passed a few more crime lab infantry, but not my good friend Bill McDermott, who must have been working in another part of the state. The white-fed Yukon, which was the AIC vehicle, was parked the farthest away, and a tall man with a goatee and wild-looking hair, dressed in a pink shirt and blue blazer, hung an arm over the sill of the open door. He held his cell phone at the other arm's length and was looking at it with an expression of disgust, his sunglasses perched on his forehead. Lolo Long glanced back at me.
"I'll handle it this time."
The federal agent tossed the mobile into the back seat of the Yukon.
"Is there any cell reception in fucking Montana?"
He glanced at me.
"I mean, I know there isn't any in fucking Wyoming, but fucking Montana, too?"
He turned to study Chief Long.
"Hey, things are looking up."
Long ignored the remark, adjusted the crime scene pack strap on her shoulder, and held out her hand.
Lolo Long, Cheyenne Tribal Chief of Police. I'm the primary investigator in this case.
He kicked his face sideways and smirked with even more enthusiasm than had the younger agent. Evidently it was a bureau thing. He looked at her hand, but didn't shake it.
You don't say.
She was showing remarkable patience and ignored that remark too, but her voice was now carrying that edge.
I am intimate with the subjects involved and have information that may lead to an early arrest.
He shook his head as if to clear it, glanced at me, and then back to her.
Early arrest, huh?
She took a breath and finally lowered the hand.
Sheriff Longmire and I...
He interrupted her carefully planned speech and glanced at me again with a more than knowing look.
Uh-huh.
She stumbled, but then regained her footing. She was getting angrier.
I have a reason to believe that this may be more than a simple case of misadventure.
You do?
Full on angry now.
Yes.
He took the sunglasses off his forehead, tossed them after the phone, and massaged the sockets of his eyes on either side of his elongated nose with thumb and forefinger.
Sounds like I don't have a thing to worry about.
He raised his face, and this time it was a grin, the kind hyenas have. Then reached out a fist and actually punched her shoulder. Then he spoke in the sing-song pattern of bad TV.
Well, how about I introduce myself? Cliff Clay of the FBI.
Chapter 3. You could have told me that you knew him. She banked the turns at 90, and I was beginning to think that this was just the way Lolo Long drove, kind of like A.J. Foyt.
And when was I supposed to have done that?
You could have jumped in at any time.
I braced a hand against the dash and checked my seatbelt. You said you wanted to handle it, in a tone of voice, I might add, which told me that I must have done a bad job previously. She didn't say anything.
You got what you wanted. You're the primary investigator on the case.
No, you got what I wanted. She shot a look at me. What makes you so cozy with the FBI that they just roll over and ask you to scratch their bellies?
I took my hat off and rested it on my lap. Not the entire FBI, just that one agent. And as point of fact, I'm the one who patched up his belly.
Her voice took on the melodic quality that his had, but with more of an edge. So how do you know Cliff Clay of the FBI?
I grimaced at the thought. Well, first I broke his jaw.
You what?
It's a long story.
She nodded her head. We've got plenty of time. You're still under arrest.
I sighed and thought about a horse that had been trapped on the battlement and the woman who loved her. He was working on a case we were both involved with, ended up gut shot down on the Powder River, and I was lucky enough to get him help.
By breaking his jaw.
That came earlier.
She took another curve as the V8 in the GMC strained under her foot. Lucky enough to help him, huh?
Yep.
So you're a lucky guy?
We shot through another straightaway and barely missed a logging truck going in the other direction.
Sometimes. Hey, speaking of, do you mind if we proceed somewhat under the speed of sound? My daughter's getting married next week, and I'd like to be there to see the wedding.
She let off the accelerator just a little, and I eased back in my seat.
Do you mind telling me why it is that you are so angry when you're dealing with people?
What are you talking about?
The way you spoke to Agent Clay.
Did you hear the way he was with me?
Her knuckles bunched on the steering wheel.
I did.
Well, then you know why.
Her head bobbed in time with the words that she bit off.
He pissed me off.
You'll excuse me for saying so, since I've only known you for about 6 hours, but that doesn't seem particularly difficult to do.
She shut down again and just stared through the windshield.
All I'm saying is that being angry with him didn't help your situation.
So your suggestion is that I should have broken his jaw?
I smiled and thought, that's what you usually get for moralizing.
Not exactly.
Yeah, well, I'm a police chief, not a sheriff. so I don't have to be a politician. I don't need the votes.
I returned my own gaze to the windshield, and it was now righteously pouring down rain. Votes notwithstanding, you keep going at it the way you are now, and you won't be a chief for very long.
We drove in silence, the emergency sirens echoing off the surrounding hills, the only sound.
His jurisdiction supersedes yours, and generally when you argue with the federal government, you lose.
She turned her lovely Cheyenne face to regard me. Tell me all about that.
I shook my head and tried to enjoy the ride. Do you mind telling me where it is we're going?
To see a man about a jeep.
After a hard left on 212, we rocketed a couple of miles west to a cutoff that had a few signs, one of which read, Welcome to Muddy Custer. What does that mean?
Muddy Custer?
No, the Cheyenne part.
She shrugged. Where they gather.
We circled the development where all the houses were exactly the same design but painted in assorted vibrant colors.
She saw me looking. Remixes. Every summer Ace Hardware comes down here and has a tailgate sale.
She pulled into a driveway where an old Volkswagen minibus, bright yellow with the words Old School, S-K-O-O-L, written down the side, was sitting on blocks, and in front of that, a mid-70s Jeep CJ5 with a partial convertible top.
I watched the rain pelting the canvas. Somebody we know?
I do.
I looked up through the rain that was battering the windshield and thought about how wet we were about to become. We both got out, and as I tugged my summer palm leaf hat down tight, I looked past the rivulets of rain dripping from the brim to examine the Jeep's twin exhaust tips. I stooped to look at the matching differential drips rainbowing on the concrete surface of the driveway. When I stood, she was already around the other vehicle and headed for the porch to our right with her sidearm drawn. I spoke loudly so as to be heard above the sheets of rain. I don't suppose I could have my gun back?
She ignored me, and I watched as a curtain in the window to the left of the front door slipped back in place. Chief Long stepped up and pounded on the frame of the screen, then turned to look at me as I joined her on the step below.
Hopefully he's really drunk and passed out.
What we don't want is him just a little drunk.
I crossed my arms and tried to make a smaller target for the downpour.
Because?
She pounded on the aluminum door again, the saturated portions of her uniform making provocative patterns.
Then he's dangerous.
I thought I could hear somebody moving around in the small house. What if he's sober?
Then I've got the wrong house.
She reached out, pulled the screen door aside, and banged on the door itself a half dozen times with the butt of the revolver.
Come on, you Indian taco, I know you're home.
I joined her on the porch, under the remains of a metal awning that sifted the downpour into interesting streams that were hard to avoid, but it was better cover than nothing. I'm assuming, and only assuming, mind you, that his real name is an Indian taco.
Last bull, but he's part Mexican.
She drummed on the door again, leaving horseshoe-shaped indentations on the cheap interior-grade surface.
Clarence, I know you're in there. Your shitty Jeep is sitting out here leaking onto the driveway.
It sounded like someone knocked a bottle off a table inside, and I waited as Long pounded some more. After a moment, the door opened, about 4 inches, and a red, bleary eye looked past the security chain while the smell of alcohol and vomit breathed out.
Well,
his voice was deep and slurred, and it looked as if the chief had gotten the condition she'd hoped for.
Open the door.
The eye seemed to consider it.
Well, why?
Because I said...
Her response was cut short when she noticed he had slipped the barrel of what appeared to be a shotgun into the opening. His movements were slow, and he fumbled with the chain as he repeatedly attempted to undo it with the weapon stuffed under his arm. From my perspective, I could see that the breech was jacked and the thing was unloaded. I started to mention this to Long, but she had already reared a foot back.
Chief, wait!
Her foot hit the door. From personal experience, I know what the cheap single-ply doors did in these kinds of situations.
and she booted a round hole in it about 10 inches in diameter, admitting her foot into the house, but little else. Clarence Lastbull dropped the shotgun and predictably ran as best he could. I reached over and grabbed Long by the collar of her wet uniform shirt and yanked her back to the side in an attempt to get her free from the door, as we fell backward alongside the concrete steps into some grandfather sage, she elbowed me, scrambled off, and charged toward the doorway.
"Wait a minute!"
She continued to ignore me and splashed up the steps with the long barrel of her .44 leveled, careful this time to kick the more structurally rigid side. I decided it was time to cut Clarence off at the pass. There was a sidewalk that led to the back of the house, and after rounding the corner, I slapped open a cyclone fence to find a concrete stoop not unlike the one in the front. There was a wooden-handled garden rake leaning against the painted siding, and I grabbed it. Lastbull was pretty intent on getting to the dirt that constituted the yard, which kept him from noticing the rake handle I slipped between his legs. Fortunately for him, he cleared the concrete steps. Unfortunately, he then hit the largest puddle in the yard face first. I had dropped the landscaping tool and started toward him when Lolo Long blew through the rear screen door and pitched herself on top of Lastbull just as he had started to get up. He was tall but skinny and incredibly inebriated, which gave the chief the upper hand. The air had gone out of him, and now they were both covered in mud. He flipped her to the side, but she wrapped her legs around the trunk of his body and pulled him over after her. He tried to reach a feeble hand back, but she struck him a nasty blow to the head with the revolver, and he slumped still. She pushed him over and lay there, breathing, looking up at me from the detonation of drops that struck the puddle surrounding her. She wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. "Thanks for the help."
"It was nothing."
She kicked at the dead weight of his body, and when his face slumped into the murky water, she holstered the Smith and cuffed his hands behind his back. I looped a hand under one of Clarence Lastbull's arms and dragged him away from the puddle before he drowned. It was dry in the Cheyenne Tribal Police Law Enforcement and Detention Center, and the environs were as comfy as could be expected. Of course, I couldn't speak for the man snoring fitfully in the holding cell with a blanket over his head. A stolid-looking patrolman with a pockmarked face who was gently humming a tune to himself and eating portions of an apple that he carved with a yellow-handled pocket knife, was watching me. I twirled the tiny ring on my little finger, glad that it hadn't fallen off in the backyard melee. "Can I have a piece?" He cut off another eighth, shoved it in his mouth, and looked at me, his expression as blank as the walls that surrounded us. I leaned back in the chair that Long had told me to sit in and glanced around the empty office at the couple of other tables pushed against the bare walls. After placing the suspect in the holding cell, the chief had deposited me with the quiet man and had repaired to the locker room in the back. From the sound of it, she was taking a shower as the Sphinx guarded me. I guess I was still under arrest.
"So you barked too much and they cut your vocal cords?"
I looked out the vertical window next to Long's desk and watched the wind rock the trees and plaster rain against the double-paned glass.
"You can learn a lot about a person by examining her desk, even if there's not anything on it."
Chief Long's was completely vacant, except for an old push-button line phone and one manila folder.
"Hey, do you mind if I make a phone call?"
He sighed deeply and continued to hum. I waited for him to say something, but he didn't. After a while, I started dropping my attempts at social graces and surrendered to the exhaustion I felt. I leaned back in my chair and pulled my hat down partially over my face. It was that way sometimes with the Cheyenne. Conversation simply wasn't required, and silence was very often a sign of respect. However, even though I knew he wasn't attempting to make me feel unwelcome, he wasn't exactly knocking himself out to become my newfound pal, either. Nothing happened for a while. Then, from under the brim of my hat, I saw Lolo Long walk in our general direction. She sat in a chair beside the deputy, but they didn't look at each other, preferring to sit at an angle with their eyes centered on an area roughly mid-wall.
As far as I could tell, the two danced around subjects, one providing a counterpoint to the other's silences with singular responses and small sounds that I'm sure carried their own meanings of verbal sustenance. They weren't whispering, but were still respectful of my supposed sleep, and the consonants sounded like small, bright birds in faraway trees. The vowels like a lullaby. His chair squeaked, and he closed the door, and then she moved to my left. I tipped my hat back up and opened my eyes. Her hair was still wet from her shower, and she had changed uniforms.
"I don't think your staff likes me."
She studied the folder that had been on her desk, shrugged, and kept reading. "He's probably just pissed off because we've got his half-brother in the holding cell. But Charles says only about 3 words a week anyway, so who knows?"
"Every family has a black sheep. Some have two."
I looked around at the half-dozen empty desks that were shoved against the wall.
"Where are the rest of your personnel?"
She gestured with a distracted hand and continued to study the file.
"I fired them."
I turned and looked at her, expecting more but not getting it.
"Excuse me?"
She shrugged.
"I fired Charles, too, but he keeps showing up. He hasn't been paid in 2 weeks. I don't know if he understands that he's been fired. He lacks imagination. And I have to admit that it's a trait that's growing on me.